This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
Dan Laird grew up, as he called it, in the shadows of the University of Georgia campus. How did he end up at Auburn? A recruiting visit from Rodney Garner started the process. Laird came to the Plains with Terry Bowden as the head coach. His career finished with Tommy Tuberville at the helm. He took over for Damian Craig and struggled. But by the time his senior year rolled around, Laird was playing his best football and was part of an SEC Western Division champion. Like so many Auburn student-athletes, Laird and his family have made their home in Auburn. His defensive coordinator in high school told him that should be a factor in his recruitment. Ben Laird is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. We welcome in former Auburn quarterback. He was at one time a partner with me when we were doing some TV together. And now filling in this past weekend on the Auburn-LSU game for Touchdown Radio, Ben Laird joins us. Ben, War Eagle, how are you today?
I'm good, Andy. How are you, buddy? War Eagle.
Doing well. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on the Talking Tigers podcast. I want to just talk about your career at Auburn. We had you on the Tiger Tailgate Show presented by Kaneka Sausage earlier this year, and you told the story about your recruiting. And I'll be honest, I had heard bits and pieces about that recruiting at Auburn. I had not heard it into the detail that you told us about that. You grow up in Georgia territory. I know you probably grew up watching Georgia football. So how is it that you ended up coming to Auburn?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I did. I grew up in Hartwell, and we were literally in the shadows of the arches of Athens, basically. I mean, it's right down the road. We're pretty much geographically almost exactly in between Clemson and Athens, Andy.
Okay.
And I basically, some of the best advice I got when I was a freshman in high school, I had a defensive coordinator for our varsity football team named William Devane. And Coach Devo, as we called him, was the three technique beside William the Refrigerator Perry on the Clemson National Championship team. They were actually roommates. And so he obviously you can think and kind of envision how large of a man this was. And one of the things that he told me as a freshman that, Ben, it is highly likely you're going to be a Division I college prospect. And it is now time for you to kind of take a step back from the fandom and not be a fan of a particular school or team. You really need to begin looking at it globally and kind of find the best fit for you, most importantly. And then where is a place that's reasonably able to attend by your family. You know, you don't want to go across the country because nobody's ever going to see you play. And then the other thing that he actually said was you need to take into account that probably where you go to school and where you play football, as long as you're not a turd, is going to be somewhere that you may want to live and work and raise a family. And so I took all that to heart, took a step back, and I'll never forget, Andy, I started getting recruited by Georgia and Carolina and Clemson and all those folks, you know, really as a sophomore when I became the starting quarterback, because I was the beneficiary of having upperclassmen that were D1 prospects. So they were guys coming to look at those young men and those fellas, and I just happened to be seen on the practice field as well. But after my sophomore season starting at quarterback, I actually went. It was like, you know, springtime, wintertime, we're getting ready for spring ball. And that's about the time that the college coaches back in the day before 2020, that was about the time they hit the road and really kind of made themselves seen and were visiting various prospects or learning about newer prospects. Well, a few weeks prior to that, this is a funny story. We had a trampoline manufacturer that was based in Hartwell. And it was, you know, where a lot of the local folks worked, and they knew me and knew my dad, my parents and family and whatnot. Well, I took it upon myself to go and ask them if I could have some of the trampoline material because I needed to make myself a target because I didn't have enough receivers to throw to. And I wanted to start working out. So I was going to make myself something to throw into and just to pass the time. Well, they couldn't give it to me and I didn't have any money to buy it. So I cut grass. I mowed their grass around their facility a couple of times to barter with them. They gave me a big sheet of trampoline material of which I hung from the uprights, the field goals in our stadium, and spray painted targets on it where it was in the top right corner, top left corner, middle or whatever. And it went the span of the entire uprights. Well, long story short, one day while I was out there working out by myself, Rodney Garner shows up. That kicked off a long, lustrous recruiting trail until Jimbo took over when he was here and they offered me a scholarship before my senior year. And that was pretty much it. And after I came to the 95 Iron Bowl, Andy, I was sold on this place.
But what was it about that day, in addition to, I mean, I'm sure you were keeping up with Auburn. You weren't foreign to what Auburn football was about, but what was it about that day that sold you?
Well, it was a multitude of things, and it was things that happened outside of the game itself, to be quite honest with you. And the game was phenomenal. Auburn won 31-27. That was the game they called the Alabama receiver out of the back of the end zone, kind of a, you know, instant replay may or may not would have fared well back then in that particular game. But Auburn came out on top, luckily, and you know, won the Iron Bowl at home. But when Coach Garner called me and they had, you know, been, hey, we're offering you a scholarship. And me having not experienced the recruiting process or having a sibling that had gone through it, or I really didn't understand the whole offering situation, you know, hey, I was pretty black or white. Hey, you have a scholarship here or you don't. And Auburn and Georgia and Carolina and Miami and a lot of these schools and Tennessee even had said, hey, you know, we want you here. We want you to come here. We've got a spot for you. And Auburn had said that. I took it upon myself to assume that was a scholarship offer. And so when Coach Garner called me and said, hey, we want you to come to the Iron Bowl, we reserve spots as recruits only for those that we have offered scholarships to. And I said, okay, so you're offering, you know, you've offered me a scholarship. He said, his words were, hell, I offered you a scholarship months ago. What did you not hear about that? You know? So I took that for an instance. And I said, well, coach, with all due respect, I've already told, I can't remember who it was, maybe South Carolina. I've already told Carolina that I'd come watch them play Clemson. And he said, well, here's the deal, Ben, talk to your dad, talk to your folks, you know, just let me know. If you show up on Saturday, you'll have tickets waiting on you. I was like, okay, cool. So I get off the phone with him, and my dad's, you know, in the other room, and he says, hey, who was that? So I was just Coach Garner wanted to invite me to the Iron Bowl. And he said, well, what'd you tell him? So I told him I couldn't go. And my dad didn't really interfere or interject with all this stuff very much. He was just there in a support role. He said, what'd you tell him? I said, well, I told him I couldn't go. We're going to Columbia to the ball game. He goes, well, here's what you're going to do. This is the only time he kind of put his foot down. He said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to do two things. You're going to pick up the phone and you're going to call Coach Garner and you're going to tell him we're coming. And the other thing is you're going to do, you're going to call South Carolina and you're canceling. He said, son, this is the Iron Bowl. You got a scholarship offer to Auburn and you've been invited to the Iron Bowl and we're going, hands down.
How much of that was dad wanting to go to the Iron Bowl? How much of that was looking out for his son?
I think it was about 50-50, to be honest with you. Because, so Andy, what a lot of people don't know is I was born in LaGrange. And my dad worked, he was a row cropper. He farmed up until almost 1980 for years at at Callaway Farms, just outside of LaGrange. So he knew about the Iron Bowl. He knew how big it was and how and what it meant to the people, not only in the Southeast, but most importantly in the state of Alabama and in West Georgia as well. So, yes, part of that was him wanting to see it, but I think he was putting his foot down because he realized that I didn't, at that young of age, I had not been exposed to it. And that was, he knew that was the type of college football that I wanted to play. That was the environment I wanted to be in. He said, this is what we're going to do and this is what you're going to experience. To this day, among many other reasons, I'm indebted to him for doing it because it set the path for me for many years.
You're the first one that I've ever talked to that said, that mentioned this, and it was what your coach told you about thinking about your recruiting globally, in the fact that this is also an area that you may eventually live and raise a family. I've never heard a high school coach say that to a guy or gal, matter of fact, that's going on to play in athletics.
It's pretty prophetic, you know, and you think about it, and I heard it after Coach Devane said that. I actually had my dad's high school head coach say the exact same thing, say that you need to take those things into consideration, that as a, you put it this way, Andy, up until the point that you're, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old, even beyond that, we're taught as men, most importantly, to be selfless and to put others first. And to that's what our goal is as parents for our children, right? Well, at that one point in time, that was one piece of advice I got, along with the fact that, hey, this is your opportunity and you have permission to be selfish, that you need to look out for you and what is the best opportunity for you, not only for 4 years, but for potentially 40. And what type of network will you build while you're in that school? Because it is, I had a lot of real hit me between the eyes conversation between the ages 16 and 18 and the lack or unlikelihood that I would play in the NFL. And it was just by the numbers. I mean, it was, you know, you've got a better chance of getting struck by lightning than you do making it into an NFL camp. And so I looked at it from that standpoint that, okay, while I love the University of Miami, do I really want to live in Coral Gables for the rest of my life and be 18 hours away from my mom? Or do I want to go to UCLA and put my parents in a huge amount of debt? Because they're coming to watch me. I mean, they're, you know, so those kind of things come into play. And that was really a great piece of advice that those former coaches gave me.
Yeah.
That really stuck. And I, what's crazy, Andy, is if you go back and think about it and look at players that guys like DJ Shockley, David Green, Corey Phillips, myself, I mean, Gabe Gross, Kendall Simmons, I mean, all these guys, a lot of them eventually gravitate back to the area or close proximity to where they play college ball. And because that's a huge legacy thing for you, and as a man and as a professional, that's what you strive for.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you, and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama. Ben, you and I have talked in years past, and I want to talk about some of your games at Auburn. You and I have talked about LSU and Georgia 99, but I want to talk about a couple more games as you went forward in your career, because it was a career that wasn't all roses for you. I mean, there were some really tough times, I'm sure, emotionally and physically. I'll never forget the hit you took at Arkansas. So speak to the ups and downs of a college athlete. And in your case, sticking with the process. And by the time you're a senior, you're playing your best football of your career.
It was tough.
Yeah.
And it was definitely, you know, 5 years of a roller coaster. And I was very blessed and fortunate to have a really, really strong and good supporting cast, you know, among friends and family and whatnot. And because when you go back and think about it, if you look at the timeline or as the progression of my career, you're right, Andy. I was very lucky to be playing the best ball of my career as a senior, and it translated into us having the best season that we had, you know, during my career there. And we went out on a high note. But you go back and look at the trials and tribulations from, you know, concussions to shoulder injury to back surgery to getting benched as a sophomore, first year starter, you know, missing the number of games, all those kind of things that I faced, and having the faith or the trust in the process was really tough. I mean, it was hard. And going through coaching changes was difficult because you just didn't know. And I think the perfect storm for me was that I was so down and out at the time of that coaching change that just that breath of fresh air at that particular time bought me more time at Auburn. It really set me on a path of trusting it more. You know, I'll never forget Coach Tubbs called me into his office after he had his initial meeting with us as a team and said, "Hey, here's the thing. If I was going to listen to anybody else, you'd be gone. I would tell you that you need to transfer, that we don't have a spot on this roster for you. But, you know, son, I watched you play against us in Oxford this year. I've watched film of you since I got here. I watched you as a recruit." He's like, "I think you can play." He said, "You know, this is nobody's job. You're going to have to win it. You're going to have to earn it. But I'm telling you now that you will have a chance." And that's all I needed. That's all I want. It's not that I needed it. That's all I wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. That if you're going to just give me a fighting chance, and if I lose, I lose. I'll support whoever is the winner. But if I win it, I will have won it the right way in the competition. But, you know, going back to the days of, you know, when Jimbo was Coach Allison was the OC, and then he leaves and Jimbo steps in, and Jimbo and I just didn't really gee-haw. I mean, his coaching philosophy and the way that he did or did not adapt to my skill set after someone that was as uber talented as Damian, it just didn't correlate. And quite frankly, I wasn't ready to take the reins as a sophomore. I wasn't mature enough. I wasn't mentally prepared enough, and it showed. So, and then going into my junior year, you know, remember I didn't start that first game, and we ended up being fortunate enough to beat App State in that game. I came in and then injured my shoulder. And so then right back there, I go to the bottom of the cellar. And you mentioned my first game back after that shoulder injury was the day that they decided to treat my head like it was a basketball on Arkansas's field. And I probably got one of the worst tongue lashings I've ever gotten from Coach Tubbs 2 weeks after that injury or that concussion, because they interviewed me prior to they held me out of I believe it was Central Florida. Dr. Goodlett wouldn't pass me on the concussion protocol, so I couldn't play against Central Florida the following week. They interviewed me like Sunday or Monday leading into the Georgia game, and I said, I don't care if they have to roll me out there on a stretcher. I'm playing against Georgia. And I got in a little bit of trouble for that. But that was as a junior. And then my senior year, Andy, was just, it was a dream. It really was. I mean, we lost to Mississippi State. We lost to Florida twice. But then we, you know, really played Michigan very, very well in the Citrus Bowl. Really came down to whoever had the ball last, basically. But we won. One of the biggest things for me was we went undefeated at home that year, beat Georgia in overtime, beat LSU. We beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa, and kind of not just me, but our entire senior class. I mean, they went through as much difficulty through their career as I did. And I think that's really part of what galvanized us as a group and really keeps us together and holds us in strong relationships to this day.
Tell me the story about the overtime against Georgia and the game-winning touchdown against Georgia.
Man, that's one that even talking about it kind of gives me chills. When you know, that game in particular, we're coming in and when we're, you know, it's a night game in Jordan-Hare and we're excited about it. Both of us are ranked. Georgia's really, really good. Their defense is one of the tops in the nation, led by Marcus Stroud and Richard Seymour and Arontez Grant. I mean, they had some studs on defense. And what's funny, one of the funniest things about that game is Quincy Carter was hurt. And so the two starting quarterbacks were myself and Corey Phillips. Corey and I went to high school together. Corey was my backup in high school. So that was a really good, really cool thing for Hartwell, for us as a kind of hometown boys. And it was a big deal for everybody back home. But man, that game, if you remember, we started out, we were down 13-0 early. I actually threw a pick six on one of our first couple of drives. And I mean, we couldn't do anything right. And just eventually kind of crawled ourselves back into it, tied the game up. Game went into overtime. Georgia gets the ball first. Our defense held them to a field goal, thankfully. We get the ball. We run a couple of plays, you know, some off-tackle runs, inside zones with a guy that everybody is familiar with named Rudy Johnson. And then when I was fortunate enough to complete a couple audible passes that get us down literally inside the one-yard line. And everybody inside the stadium, Andy, along with everybody that was watching on television, knew that 32 was going to get the football. And Tubbs does his typical timeout just to let everything soak in and calm everybody down. And we all come to the sidelines. And just as Coach Mazzoni is calling the play, we called it literally, it was going to be pro right 32, which is about as elementary of a call as you can get. And that basically is a pro style formation with inside zone. That's it. And as we're about to break the huddle, Rudy, who hardly ever spoke a word, shut it down and said, no, we're not doing this. And you would have thought that someone had poured egg all over Coach Mazzoni and Tubbs' face because they looked at him like, what are you talking about? No, Coach, this is – give the ball to Ben. This is his game. This means that much to him. I want him to score the winning touchdown. So we ended up calling a – we rotated between Chevy and Cadillac, which was quarterback sneak. And I ran a quarterback – we changed it to quarterback sneak, and we won the ball game in overtime, and that sealed us going undefeated at home in 2000.
I was doing tape delay TV for that game. I think Stan did color with me that night. And I'll be honest with you, Ben, I thought you were going to carry the football the whole time. I thought it was going to be a quarterback sneak to you. I guess it shows how much I knew what the coaches were going to call, but I knew you were going to get the ball there. So well, I didn't know how wrong I possibly was.
Well, hey, I tell you what now, I was not going to be a scrambler, but I was good at quarterback sneaks.
There you go.
I always fell for positive yards.
When I ask you about relationships, I've talked to so many student athletes at Auburn, men, women, football, basketball, golf, track, baseball, softball, doesn't matter. A lot of athletes missed game day. Some probably miss practice, although some will tell you they don't miss practice a bit. Everybody to a man and woman, though, talks about the thing that is most important to them are the friendships that they developed at Auburn. And I'm guessing it's the same thing for you as well.
Andy, all of the games, the practice, the winter workouts, you know, the weightlifting, all of that stuff is great. And they're all fond memories to all of us as athletes. But to put it bluntly, they pale in comparison to the importance and the memories that we have with each other as far as our teammates. And I know this is not just unique to Auburn, but it is one of the things that makes Auburn special. It's not just the fact that we were only brothers with our football teammates. We had great friends that were basketball players. We had great friends that were baseball players. We had great friends that played softball and volleyball, and because we all ate together. I mean, and that's one of the, you know, you think about it, it, one of the most symbolic things to do as a family is break bread.
Yeah.
And we did that a lot, breakfast, lunch, dinner, whatever it was. If we weren't eating at Sewell Hall cafeteria, we were all up at the Hill dorm eating at the Chick-fil-A. And, you know, all those kind of things that we did together really are what made us so close. And the laughs and, you know, the jawing at one another and the picking at each other and the all in good fun. I had a long conversation the other day with Haven Fields of all people. And, you know, we stay in touch, and him and T Rob and all of the guys that I was really close to. I told Haven that I really wish, and I know I've heard this said, I really wish that people could somehow, some way, find a way to mimic the mentality of young men and women that are inside either a football huddle, a basketball huddle, a baseball dugout, a volleyball huddle, or whatever that may be, and carry that over into life in general. Because if you think about the amount of diversity that is in those huddles and in those locker rooms, and everyone, although they come from different backgrounds and socioeconomic statuses, they find a way to pull the rope in the same direction. And that was one thing that Haven and I were talking about, is that it all boils down to you're fighting a fight for one particular common goal and a greater good. And whether it's asking about their kids, or whether it's asking about my kids or work or life in general, or how things are going, man, we could not talk for 2 years and pick up the phone and talk to them, and it's like they were in my house yesterday. And I just think that's one of the beauties of athletics, or one of the most important reasons that I love Auburn so, so much, is because of the groundwork and the infrastructure that it built for me, is relationships that I know that not only will it benefit me, but it's going to benefit my daughters. And, you know, I know that with Takiyo Spikes having a daughter and a nephew that are freshmen here at Auburn right now, to be able to say, hey, Spikes, make sure they've got my cell number, because if they ever need anything, I'm right down the street and I can get to them faster than you can. And he does it, you know, and it's just a neat situation to be a part of. And I'm sure you experience it in the broadcast world, you know, and people that have common goals and insights and things. It's a relationship, and it's a bond that can't be broken.
Did you get some tips from Cole Kublik last week before you did the LSU game?
Of course I did. Do you think Cole is ever going to pass up on the opportunity to tell his quarterback that for years told him what to do? He has a lot of advice, and I'll tell you, it's amazing to look back and think that he's been in that world for almost 20 years. And I'll tell you, man, and I tell him all the time, I sound like a goofball when I tell him, but I am so proud of what he's accomplished. He's done a great, great job and continues to do great things. And I think it's, you know, Cole's Cole. He is a guy that'll give you the shirt off his back. And he is one of my best friends in this entire world, and has always been a near and dear friend to me, not just as a teammate, but just even to this day. But he is really good at what he does, and he lives it. And most importantly, he loves it. And I think it shows in his ability to broadcast and translate it to the masses.
Just give us an update. I know you live in Auburn with your family. What are you doing? And give us an idea about your family, if you would.
So family, which is, you know, first and foremost for me, I've got three daughters, Andy, No sons, all young ladies. My oldest is Marley. She is a 16-year-old junior at Auburn High. And then I have twin daughters, Aubrey and Peyton, who are both 13-year-olds at, they're eighth graders at the Auburn Junior High. So all three are in Auburn Public Schools. We live in Auburn as well, have been here since 2006, and do not see at any point in time us ever leaving this area. We've been very blessed to have an opportunity to raise our children in such a great community and around such great people and inside such a great school system that I just don't see it ever changing. I work for a company called Marsh McLennan Agencies, represent commercial property and casualty insurance folks, things of that nature across the country. But home base is here in Auburn. Been married June 2021 will be 20 years of marriage to my wife, Melanie. We met I don't know that we ever really met. We grew up together. So my folks knew her folks. We grew up together, went to middle school together, high school. We do have a mixed marriage in that she is a Georgia graduate. So that's something I have to tolerate from time to time.
You and Randy Campbell.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That is exactly right. And and Nancy always mentions it every time we see her. I my kids make fun of me a lot because I quite often will say I'm the luckiest guy in the world. And to live here, to have a successful professional career, to love Auburn as much as I do and have safe and healthy and happy children and, you know, my wife and whatnot, you actually kind of have to pinch yourself every once in a while. And I do that from time to time.
All right. Final question. And this is typically my final question to Auburn student athletes. What did Auburn mean to you as a player, and what has it meant to you now as a father, a husband, a business person that lives in this community?
As far as what it means to me and to really divide it into two is really tough. Because I think it's carried itself over so much. I do think that as a young man or young woman, even at that particular time, you're so engulfed in academics and athletics that sometimes you lose sight of the fact of the groundwork that you are laying and the foundation you're laying for years to come. But it is important. It's important to note it. It's important to know about it. And it's important to know that the impact that you have on people in that particular time can either set the right path for you or the wrong path for you. Because if you go back and think, a lot of people's interaction with you as a professional, they may remember the first time they shook your hand as a ball player. And did you handle them respectfully or did you disregard them? And that's extremely, extremely important. But I think the best word to use as far as my thoughts on Auburn is indebted. Andy, I can't tell you the amount of positive relationships and beneficial relationships and interaction that I have now that I have solely because of Auburn University. And it's not just Auburn Athletics. It's right. Auburn University as a whole and Auburn as a community. You know, I mean, my friendship with you, I wouldn't have it if I didn't play ball here, I didn't go to school here, things of that nature and stay involved in athletics in general. My, you know, relationship we have with that I have with Rod. I mean, you know, those kind of things and that I consider myself extremely lucky and indebted to Auburn for putting me in the position to know such wonderful people. And that's 100%, when I think of it, that's what I go back to.
Thank you for telling your story today. I certainly appreciate it. Wish you all the best. Well, we'll see you at the ballpark coming up, all right? War Eagle. Yeah.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate you. War Eagle, buddy.
On the next Talking Tigers podcast, a re-air of an episode from this summer. Paige and Josh Wetzel's book, Beautifully Broken, An Unlikely Journey of Faith, has been published. It chronicles Josh's time in the U.S. Army, his accident, which claimed both of his legs, and their recovery together. For Veterans Day Week, Paige and Josh Wetzel are next. For Ben Leard and the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. Whoa, Regal.